What's up, everybody? It's Keith from the Stream Team. With me, as always, is Chris Lowry and Cole Miller. And today we have somewhat of a special edition pick or movie choice that we had going today, with the sequel coming out in about a week or so. But it's going to be Black Panther, of course, with Wakanda Forever coming out, a very highly anticipated movie, and also what will probably be an extremely emotional movie, given, you know, the passing of Chadwick Boseman during the filming of it, right? I don't know how far along it was.
I think it might have been maybe like right before. I don't think they'd started doing so. I think they like started doing some of the pre-production. So like they already had like an idea of what the movie was going to be.
Right.
They were doing like some costuming and some casting, and that's when he passed. So it was like it drastically altered the course of the film. As far as, you know, another thing has been not many people knew, and like I can kind of understand that it's not everyone's business, but it definitely, like, I think it definitely caught them by shock. Like, was like a huge moment where they had to, maybe not necessarily completely, but like do a big restructuring of the film. You know, they had to like look into new locations and different sets, and it's just like, of course, anyone passing away, you know, in a, that's supposed to be in a movie, is, you know, going to be some kind of a big deal. But the lead and someone that is that beloved is just like, if they would have just not made this one at all, I'm like, I understand.
Right.
I get it.
Right.
It's kind of surprising they are, right? I mean, it's not, and it is. It's surprising they're making it because of such an integral part of the character and who became a hugely famous cultural icon.
Yep.
Because of this movie. And he already was very famous in his own right, of course.
He played James Brown.
I mean, this took him to a totally different level,
yep.
Right? And like Marvel movies do for many stars. But, you know, I know that these studios give a shit about very little besides making money, mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised there. But I am surprised that everyone else that was previously in the movie with him decided to do it, which makes me think that in some way it has to be a very tasteful and even respectful iteration of what this movie is potentially going to be, right?
Agreed. I think that that's definitely going to be the case, yeah.
I think they were saying, and this came out relatively recently, that that's the big reason why they didn't jump right into recasting, because they're just like everyone on the film was like, I'm not prepared to just act like this didn't happen and just, you know, just jump right into calling someone else T'Challa and acting like, you know, mm-hmm. that's the person who I've had this chemistry with. So it's, people are on different sides of the whole recast T'Challa movement, but I've always been like, it's whatever the creatives want to do. And then, you know, like 2 weeks ago, Lupita Nyong'o is just like, yeah, we didn't recast because we kind of told them, like, don't do that. We're not ready. Like, we want to do something to honor them. And for as much as like Marvel movies get flack, I do think like the Black Panther movies certainly are the ones that feel like they have some artistry,
yes,
to them, some expression,
absolutely,
through them.
Yep.
So like I can certainly understand this next one being the one that is just like what it is. You know, it's a send off for him, and it's like a love letter to him. It's something to, you know, honor his legacy. So they said that they didn't want to have a recast, and you know, there are important parts of that. And I'm just like, who am I as a person who's just going to pay $10 and watch this and go home to be like, actually, put someone else in that suit right now? Like, it's not that deep to me. If they are not ready, then what can we ask for?
Right, and I think with a character like, just like you're saying, Cole, somebody that played an integral part in the Marvel Universe, and a character that, when it comes to characters being introduced in a movie coming out, I don't know. Obviously, the main pieces of the Avengers, a Cap, Iron Man, Thor, those are huge characters. But whenever you have like ancillary pieces starting to come in, like you have Sam and you have Black Panther and you have the Winter Soldier and Wanda, and people starting to come in, these are the people that people really started to get really attached to. And just outside of that, Chadwick Boseman seemed to be an actor that everybody, like, of course, when it comes to somebody passing, whether it be an athlete, actor, somebody of, you know, notoriety or whatever, when somebody passes, of course, somebody's going to come out and speak ill of them. But literally, whenever he passed, it just seemed like a complete outpouring of like love and affection, and everybody had stories about him, how kind he was and how generous he was, and just how much of a light he was on set. And just how, you know, just when he came in the room, just like he made everything better for everybody. So I agree with both of you when it comes to this movie. I know the people who were attached to it were like, we're not going to do this unless it's done right. And so I feel like the full cast. I think this needed the support of the full cast and not just like a couple of the integral pieces or characters who were going to be in it. Everybody needed a write-off on this to be like, this is how I want this to be for him in memory of him, because anything less than a tribute or something that would honor him would be completely disrespectful. And so I agree with you, Cole. Like, I am surprised, but I'm also not surprised. But when it comes to this, I think we're going to be pleasant. I think we'll be very happy with the outcome of it. But also, it's going to be an extremely emotional movie. You know, of course, not having any personal relationship with this person, still, they're just some people, actors, athletes, whatever. Upon their passing, it just shakes deeply. Of course, you know, most recently with the Kobe passing, the whole world was shook. That was an absolutely seismic event, and it shook people to the core, like sports world or not. Everybody was posting pictures, and I mean, there's still Kobe stories coming out, you know, and every time I see a video of it, I have to stop and listen, because each story is better than the next. So I think that this is going to be an absolutely incredible movie, but I think it's also going to be extremely emotional. And I'm going to tell you, I am not prepared for whatever's about to happen when it comes to this movie. I'd say it's going to be fun and not fun all at the same time. But a movie that came out in 2018, what? Directed by Ryan Coogler, I remember like it was yesterday going to the theater. This is again, when it comes to the Marvel Universe, I remember going to see a movie and just the absolute buzz around it. This ranks up there with as far as like the Avengers buzz or the, you know, any of the bigger pieces that came out. And most recently, you know, all of the Avengers, in particular Endgame, we saw a giant buzz around it. But this movie, I mean, just going to the movie theater, I remember seeing the lines of people. I remember, you know, like,
you guys got coins or something, didn't you? You and Ab got some little.
What did we get?
Because I know you went before me and you told me about it. You guys got something. Because you guys went on the Thursday. I didn't go until...
Oh, man. I couldn't pass it up. We did get something. Man, I can't remember what it was. But it was just like... It was a cultural reset.
It was when it comes to a movie
like this.
Quarter. I got the
Captain... Yeah. we all got the necklaces. And we had the Black Panther suit when we left.
Yeah, you don't know what you're sitting on, buddy. I know. He just threw it basket in his bathroom. It's like, sir, hold on.
But I mean, when it comes to cultural relevance and just like a cultural reset, we've talked about several movies, you know, like Fast and the Furious, where like language came from something or phrases came from something or whatever. Like, we talk about people saying Wakanda forever or like putting their arms across their chest, like, you know, Chadwick Boseman did as Black Panther, as T'Challa. Like, I don't know, of all of the Marvel movies culturally, is there one, Chris, that you think is more important than this one in the universe? I know that is an extremely weighted question, but can we, I mean, out, you know, when we talked about Shang-Chi, we didn't even talk about it with reverence like this, you know, I mean, it's like this was a huge event more so than it was a movie.
Yeah, no, this one certainly was like a huge, huge cultural event. Like you said, all the other Avengers movies have certainly felt like event films, which is what they are. Mm-hmm. Like the Avengers films themselves are built to be up like that, but like rather than just being an event film, and I don't know if this distinction will make any sense, this one did feel like a cultural event. And of course, just what it had been for, you know, Black people. Of course, there have been Black superhero films before, but there hadn't really been one, you know, since comic books hit this big boom here recently. There hasn't really been, you know, correct, the most diversity. They hadn't gotten one like that. And to see this ensemble cast, you know, like they're like actors that are in this that, you know, our parents and like even our grandparents probably saw and like were hooked on it. And there's like people from every generation you can think of. So like there was someone in here that everybody knew, and they were giving so many people a chance to come out and see their favorite actors and know just the scope and the scale of the MCU and, you know, how much that's revered and how much people love that. And to see this kind of film, I mean, it had like people from... It had Black people in Montana like wearing dashikis like this. Like the world was going insane. I was like, you are from Montana. So how did you get that? Like it had people. I mean, like it, my mom has been to see, as far as I know, 3 superhero movies. She went and saw Man of Steel for God knows why. I have no idea why. I couldn't tell you. She saw
Superman, man.
I guess it's like the same Superman thing. It's the culture. You get
Superman,
people in there.
I'm telling you, that Christopher Reeve Superman was different. Everybody was going to see him.
Well, again, I know he's big, but I was like, Mom, you name one other super. She thought Superman was a Marvel character, so I was like, hell, I guess when you know, you know. She just kind of hooked and she saw it, but she saw that. She saw Black Panther with us, and then she seen Infinity War. And it's like, and she got like a custom shirt made for Black Panther. Yep. We went as like a huge group. Like it was a real deal, dude. And she only went and saw Infinity War because she saw Black Panther. Like, it's crazy. Like, not to harp on it too much, because I could talk about what this meant to people all day. But as far as like, has there been a Marvel movie that has shaken, you know, culture like this? I would just say no. And there's some stuff in trivia and later parts of the pod that I'm sure we'll get to tell you how monumental this was to people. But there just really hasn't been one. Like, I love Tony Stark to death, but he ain't getting the streets moving like this. I'm sorry.
He's not.
Streets ain't shaking ass for Tony Stark. I'm sorry, buddy.
No.
Like, they were playing bongos in Tennessee.
Literally.
How did you get bongos in Tennessee? That doesn't make
Tennessee,
I can't even put that together in my mind. Like, this is a huge deal, man. I'm sorry I just was putting a bunch of run-on sentences together, but I just can't even get out like what this meant to the world at the time that it came out.
Man, it was huge, and just getting to the theater, there was a buzz. And again, this isn't the first Marvel movie to have a buzz around it. It was palpable, and it's comparable to like when The Dark Knight came out, or when just like several big, back when there were midnight releases, that type of movie. You know, if there were still midnight releases, this would be a midnight release that would have a line around the block. You know, and while I do love a Thursday night release, it is fun as hell, man. There was just something different. There was just a different feeling around a midnight release, and man, it just was captivating. It was gripping. But you're right, it was a complete cultural reset. Like, there were people, this wasn't just a Marvel movie for Marvel's sake. Like, this brought parents out, this brought grandparents out, this brought people who were just like, I'll wait till it comes out on but people who would say, I'll wait till it comes out on tape, even though tapes aren't even coming out anymore,
right? Opening,
like,
weekend
kind of people, you know. It's like, well, no, it's just going to come out on streaming, granddad. Like, we don't have to wait on a tape. Like, we'll just wait until it streams. We can watch it at the house. Like, there's people who actively avoided movie theaters going to see movies like this. And Chris, I think that was a perfect example. You're talking about your mother going to see this movie. That's the kind of crowd that it drew. It didn't just draw the Marvel fan. Everybody was going to see it, because when you see a cast like this, this is just like, I am going to see this movie. You know, it's just like you say, there's somebody, it's like, oh, this Forrest Whitaker. Oh, this Angela Bassett. Angela Bassett.
Those two people are in this movie. What the hell?
Listen.
The star power's insane, right?
It's off the charts. And, Cole, and I know you're not even a big Marvel guy, but I can say, you know, I can comfortably say that and confidently say that this is one of your top Marvel movies, just because, not even because of the cultural relevance, but just because of how good of a movie it is and how pivotal it is in the Marvel universe.
Exactly. It's my number one. And it's kind of my number one by like a far margin as well.
Right.
And I think that on top of what both of you said so perfectly, what it meant to people, you can also just, and this is going to sound cheap in comparison to a movie that, you know, touched an entire culture of people, but it's also just a really fucking good movie, you know, like,
it's just a good movie.
Like, if you even remove the fact that it changed the way, you know, we think about Marvel movies, because it was one of the first to be nominated for Best Picture, right? And just win.
That was a trivia.
Oh, sorry about that, Chris.
No, I was like, I wanted you to say it because that's your thing. So I was like, Cole, yeah. I don't want to step on it. That's his bag.
And like, you just think about how you change the vision of how a movie is perceived, right? Because before this, there wasn't this belief that Marvel movies could be like an auteur type cinema. And this movie was, man. And part of that is because of an unbelievable cast, an unbelievable director, just kind of the best version of what it could be. But they also did the thing that they try not to do in Marvel movies, at least a good portion of them, is they do their best to not lose kind of that Marvel-y feel about it. But there are times in this movie where it doesn't feel like a Marvel movie at all. It just feels like a completely separate entity. And that's not to say that that isn't, you know, again, there are really cool stuff in Marvel movies. I'm not trying to say it like that. But what I mean is that this is a standalone great picture where you just kind of let a director who was, you know, becoming one of the greatest in Hollywood just do his thing, right? Because there are so many elements of this movie that don't feel like Marvel movies at all. Like the examination of race in this is pretty unbelievable. In fact, like you think of a character like Michael B. Jordan's, and what other character in any Marvel movie is anything like that? Right? It's not even, there aren't any, and I'm sure y'all have seen them all, and I have seen most of them at this point, but I can't even compare a character that has a backstory like this. Of course, there are characters that have had, you know, families killed and things like that, but to just have a character that was so complex be your bad person, but in a lot of ways, not even be the person that you're fully rooting against, because like you don't know how you're supposed to feel. And that's stuff that Hitchcock has done. That's stuff that Martin Scorsese has done. That's not stuff that's been done in superhero movies.
Cole, and I was, it's funny you said that, because I was going to, as I'm wearing a Killmonger shirt as we record, I was going to say he definitely falls in the category of, and we've talked about this with a couple of movies, like in The Rock, I talked about it with Ed Harris's character, is like, he's not completely wrong in what he's fighting for, but it's just his execution.
Yeah, he's almost like blow stuff up, and it's just like, oh, there's a middle ground there, I think. Like, you're on to something.
Right, yeah, he definitely falls in that category of like bad guys that I side with a little bit.
Well, and that's kind of the interesting part about it, right? It's like, that's the thing that, you know, of course they don't want you to feel for the heavy, but this movie is not like that at all, right? Like, part of the way, why it runs so well, especially in the middle, the second act of the movie, is that you are so conflicted with who you're actually fucking pulling for. You know what I mean? It was like, in a lot of ways, it was like, oh shit, yeah, absolutely. Like, he's right. I mean, of course, you know, killing all these people, that's probably not the right move. Like, of course that, but it's like, he's right. Like, this is he's trying to liberate a people. And of course he's, you know, kind of blindly raging. And that's why, you know, he has this so much pent up animosity, but it's hard to believe that, I mean, it's hard to not sympathize with him because of that.
Right. And of course, given his backstory, and we get small pieces of it, and I think that it's done beautifully how we see the different characters in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. Like you said, the pacing of it is just great. A movie that runs 2 hours and 14 minutes, it doesn't bog down.
It's the smoothest 2 hours anywhere in the MCU. I'll say it. Right. Like, it's the smoothest 2 hour film that they have.
Because that's a daunting 2 hours, 15 minutes of a like just full-fledged Marvel movie is kind of daunting. And I know most of them run pretty long, but it's like the ones that tend to do that have action sequence, those fatigue me by the end of them. This was not like that at all.
No, not even a little bit. Like I said, everybody's story was given, and we were fed little pieces of it, and then like we got the beginning, and we saw, you know, of course what happened there at the beginning, and then everybody comes in at the right time. I think, like Cole, like you're talking about, going back to this was just a Marvel movie and just a movie in general where I felt like all the pieces of it absolutely work. We're talking about like the cast, like you're saying, the ensemble casting that was incredible. Like, you have Forrest Whitaker just casually being T'Challa's uncle. And then we have like the soundtrack, the score is incredible. The movie is beautiful. Like, as we get into Wakanda, because we you know, when it comes to movies about African nations, or like, you know, we watch a Blood Diamond, and I'm not going to jump on that like it's a bad movie, because it talked about, of course, it had a huge message as well, talking about, you know, blood diamonds, obviously. But when it comes to showing African nations, or showing, a lot of times we see countries like that, they're always impoverished, right? And it's always like poor, and everything's dusty and dirty, and nobody has shoes on. And then we get into this, and it's like one of the richest nations ever. And I think it's just a great way to showcase this in a tasteful way. And it also didn't trample on anybody like of African heritage too, I think. And that's what's also like, as far as representation goes, when it comes to somebody going to watch a movie and being like, I fully feel represented. You know, I don't think anybody felt trampled on or anything like that. And that's, I think, that the beauty of this, like something that Ryan Coogler pulled off. I mean, a guy who almost, you know, specifically works like Michael B. Jordan, just about all the movies that he's directed, or I think all the movies he has directed, Michael B. is in them, right? Yeah. I guess I mean, it's like the Spike and Denzel combination, right? It's like those movies are going to hit every time.
Scorsese
and, so
great. Like, why would you use anybody else? Scorsese. You know?
Right. It works, you know? Like it's going to make it, he's going to make it happen.
Scorsese's nuts though, because he has like four of those guys. Like, you can name like four like the greatest people ever, and he like always works with those. Like, that guy's a cheat code. He's simply too good. I don't know if you guys have ever thought about that, but that Martin Scorsese guy might be a little too good.
He's good, huh? Yeah, he
got a couple pictures.
He lets people kind of age out of him, you know, and then right. He goes to somebody else. Yeah,
you will stop before I will, and he's been right every time.
Right. Absolutely. But we have, like I said, directed by Ryan Coogler. Of course, one of my favorite directors. Rotten Tomato score of 96 to 79. That's 79. Eat complete shit, by the way.
Like, that's weird.
Eat a giant pile of it. You know,
I could talk about it, but I don't want to put my, not even tinfoil hat on. I don't want to put my common sense hat on too much. We can attribute a couple of things to what's going on with that score.
Correct. Correct. Real quick, Chris, just give us a brief synopsis of why that 79 is a 79 compared to the 96 from critics.
It, unfortunately, there are certainly things about this movie that are worth having issues. I think there's some like CGI and stuff that people not like, but I mean, we know what goes on in the world in this country. This movie kind of got review bombed. Like, this movie had a lot of people being like, oh, what if we made a movie with an all white cast? Like, how would you feel about that? And I was just every movie that's not this one. You describe every movie that's not
all of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like,
White History Month.
It's like Martin Freeman's right there. He's in the. He's got a poster. He's right there. He's sticking out like a sore thumb. Andy Serkis is right there.
Andy Serkis is right. I was like, yeah,
and give like
right
the third
there.
Best performance of the movie. He's right there.
Listen, but, Andy Serkis, we'll get to him. But Andy Serkis was a fucking.
Has he ever been
like,
bad in a movie? He has not. We don't have to.
No.
Shows up and you're like, man, put him in the movie more. Oh, he's gone. But I mean, but that is part of it. Like, certainly there are people who can have legitimate gripes, and there are probably certain people who, you know, just don't really enjoy comic book films, and part of their negative review was, you know, as Cole said, for the most part, it doesn't have a lot of the Marvel issues, whether it be pacing or like humor or just that kind of overall feel. But it maybe has that a couple of times, and that just turned people off completely, which is fine. If it's not your thing, it's whatever. But there was, I remember when it came out, because even before the movie released, and this is kind of why they've tried to change how the audience score stuff goes. I mean, the second this stuff opened up on Rotten Tomatoes, you could throw the scores in. It was kind of getting some review bombs. I mean, the worst thing that you can ever do in your life is look through the comments on anything, but you can look through some of their views, especially, and they're just like saying terrible, awful things, and so...
Not even related to the movie?
No, yeah, not even related to the movie. Like, if I could give you a dollar for every time I've heard there should be a Black Panther movie with, like, or what if this person got cast as Black Panther and it's like Ryan Gosling as Black Panther? I could buy Marvel Studios if I had a dollar for every time I've seen that meme to, like, do something. And, like, there are people who, you know, come from it from that kind of a negative place with how they want to engage it, because they have a very narrow worldview, and it's certainly sad, but I mean, obviously the movie succeeded despite that, but I will say there's a little bit of that, you know, that 21% that's missing, and of course it wouldn't be 100% of the audience score, but a little bit of that 21% is made up of freaks and weirdos and ghouls and goblins that talk like that.
But you're right. That's absolutely it. That's just what it was, because this movie fucking rocks, and it's great from beginning to end. I mean, it's everything. I love everything about this movie. Truly, like, it had. I mean, but also this tells me how good this movie was, because it had a $200 million budget. This movie did over $1 billion. This movie did $1 billion. So
it's still
clearly
a top 10 movie, right, of all time.
It's very high up there. So that 79 score is clearly not indicative of how good of a movie it actually is. And it just shows that, again, Chris, like you're saying, that there's just a bunch of review bombers who probably, not even probably, just didn't go see it and just automatically like, this movie stinks because it's all black or whatever, but just want something to complain about. And then even if there was a movie with an all-white cast, and they'd be like, where's the Italian or whoever, right? Like there would always be something. So that is unfortunately the anonymous faceless crowd that just likes to throw out hateful things on the internet and while they, you know, sit in their mom's basement and eat their cold ravioli. So we'll let them have that. And then here cold in the real ravioli, world, we're
that's too fine cuisine for these people. That's almost like stomachable. You're being too nice.
Yeah, I was just trying to give them something half decent. But here in the real world, we're going to go watch good movies and enjoy them like we should. But this movie is great. It's legitimately one of my favorite Marvels, and it's very difficult to say because there's a lot of really good movies in this universe, but it is high up there and for very good reason. I mean, it starts out like there's just so many aspects of this movie that I like. I mean, even just, you know, I'm a big trailer person, but just the trailer behind this movie,
like,
and the
trailer
way
absolutely.
I remember it played during a playoff game. I remember like that first little teaser when he blows the car up and does that flip. Like, yeah, I remember seeing that, and then like Steph Curry drained a three in someone's face.
Yeah, I was
right
about
after
to say, I'm pretty sure the first time I saw it was like a Golden State game.
It definitely was, dude. So
oh,
that's not a false memory.
I'm way behind on these. I might need to watch all of them. You know, like. And then I think, Keith, you saw it before me, and I think I texted you and asked you if I'd know what the fuck was going on. And that was another brilliant thing that Coogler did. It's like, you don't have to be immersed in the world. Like, you can just watch this as a standalone film. And that's kind of, you know, that is a very appealing thing to people like your mom, Chris, right? Because, like, if you have to watch 21 movies to know what the fuck's going on, like, it's hard to have a great time.
It's a tough beat.
Right. It's very difficult. There are some pieces from other movies that are put into this, and of course it's gonna make sense. But as far as just going to go watch a movie and not be like, who is this guy? Who is that guy? What's going on? What is this inside joke? And still enjoy it, clearly with the result that it had. I mean, it did extremely well. And like you're saying, like just like we're talking about, just the importance and relevance of this movie, like where it was showcased. I mean, you're talking about more than likely. So it came out, I can't remember. I mean, it would have been, I guess, the fall. Or was it the summer?
No, this came out in February. This came out February.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
This came out February. And then Infinity War is the very next movie.
That's right. That's right. It was February this year. So, I mean, it's coming out during prime time. You know, like you're talking about Cole and Chris. The trailers are coming out during prime time television viewing. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm up watching something late night and I just saw a trailer. Like, this was prime watching prime
nitty gritty basketball was being played, like meaningful games are on that night, and they're like, here's this thing real quick, and you're like, oh,
tons of marketing dollars put behind this movie, and rightfully so. I mean, this movie was definitely, it was showcased to the masses as it should have been, man, and it absolutely crushed. But like you're talking about, I mean, we have everybody, we have different stories that are colliding in this. We have, you know, coming off of Infinity War and coming off of the death of King T'Chaka, and we have, you know, like, we have T'Challa coming into power and, you know, coming off of that, and then we have Killmonger and his backstory. Chris, as far as just, you know, setting this movie up and giving us our main characters early on, I mean, just from that opening scene, is Sterling K. Brown. I'm going to tell you, that was my Mr. Mustang, man. He, like, to casually have Sterling K. Brown in your movie, dude.
Just, like, loosely bring in.
Casually.
Yeah. Just like one of the coolest fucking guys, man.
When he, like, I mean, just that opening scene where he was just talking about, like, he was, you know, of course it was young Forrest Whitaker at the moment. We didn't know at the time, but he's like, there's two Grace Jones looking chicks at the door. And he's like, open it. And he's like, they won't knock again. You know, I mean, just how great he was. And I mean, the tears that came on. And of course, Chris, like you've said in several movies, I know I'm drooling over what people call acting.
See, you've got the bug like me too. It's just, you get so caught up. You're like, I forgot it's a word, a verb already, but like something about it just makes your brain cut off. It's so good.
It's different. Just like setting up. I mean, just to start the movie, and we have those young characters unbeknownst to us. We just see the movie opening up in Compton and on the West Coast, but like having this movie start the way it does and getting our characters introduced, how great was that to get this movie started?
It is. It's the perfect way to kind of start this and get into it. And it does also do the thing that we were talking about a second ago, how it doesn't really require you to know too much about any of the, you know, dozen movies that came out before. You know, some of these other ones will start mm-hmm. off with, you know, some kind of reference to the movie that came out before this in the series, or the movie that came out of this in the universe as a whole. And this one goes right into, you know, the only past stuff you're really concerned about is the past of the people specifically in this movie. You know, it doesn't jump in, you know, it's the direct follow-up to Civil War, right? And it doesn't lead up with someone talking to Captain America. Like, it starts out on small-scale story of, you know, Sterling K. Brown's character, then his brother coming in. It's just this nice setup to throw you right into the movie and to get an idea of, you know, what Wakanda looks like compared to the rest of the world, and understanding that, you know, they're mm-hmm. kind of all over the place, and just the perfect way to ease you into a movie that's going to be different from, you know, the rest of the movies in this series. And again, and if you're someone who hasn't seen it, that's fine. It's just going to ease you into a movie in general. So it does just a great job of setting you up and letting you know that this one is going to be different, and it's going to be a little bit more stylish and a bit more heartfelt and a bit more touching than some of the other ones that we've seen. Because again, it didn't start off with an explosion and a fight. It's like, you know, this is like a real issue that these people are kind of facing and trying to find a way around.
Well, I think it was great because it is very evident watching this movie and rewatching this movie that Ryan Coogler got a lot of artistic freedom in this. And he had
the Kevin Feige to fuck himself.
Right.
So you come down and sit and tell me do any goddamn thing, I'm going to stab you in the neck. That's how we're going to get this movie made, Kevin. You stay over there, Kevin, you let me cook, and I'll make you $1 billion.
Shut the fuck up.
I'll make you $1 billion.
Shut the fuck up while grown folks is talking. Yeah, they've taken an Oscar-winning director and chopped her legs off from under her, right? And somehow Ryan Coogler gets all the power in the world to make this movie. And of course he should have, right? Because he did the same thing with fucking Creed and revived a franchise, right? Like, so the guy knows what he's doing. I'm blown away by every time I rewatch it, I'm like, how did he get them to let him do this? Like, Sam Raimi couldn't even let him do what he fucking wanted.
Right. He got $200 million and he was like, I'll go get you $1 billion. He said, you know what's cooler than $1 million? $1 billion. And he went and fucking got it, dude. Like, it was he got that autonomy to be able to do whatever he wanted, and it is extremely clear and extremely evident. Cole, we're talking about a movie that's easily digestible, something that even a non Marvel fan can go in and watch. How important is that when it comes to the Marvel universe, but in particular a movie like this that has such cultural relevance that the universe, you know, that of course, like, Marvel Studios wants everybody to go see this and not just Marvel fans. How important was it to be able to just walk, you know, buy two tickets to Black Panther, go in, sit down, and know exactly what's going on from the jump, and just enjoy the fucking movie for the whole 2 hours and 15 minutes?
Yeah, and that's a part of the, you know, Marvel, they do a really good job of making these umbrella films that, mm-hmm. you know, appeal to as large of audiences as they possibly can, right? And in a lot of ways, that's a very, you know, admirable thing, because they found ways to do it over the course of, what are we at now, 29 movies, Chris, something like that?
Honestly, probably like 30.
Yeah, if you count TV shows and all this shit, but like they keep finding ways to do this, right?
Right.
This mm-hmm. one seems particularly interesting because it also, you know, it shows that there are a lot of people that struggle as well. Right. Like, and it appeals to a crowd of kind of understanding that not everything in the Marvel universe is just all fucking rainbows and guns. There is topics like race that get brought up in this movie. There are mm-hmm. all of these different things that, and not even that, just revenge. You think of, you know, sexism, just so many different topics that I think that if more Marvel movies could try to do something like this that didn't just try to make jokes that hit everywhere, they also made stories that appealed to a wider audience of people too, if that makes sense. If y'all know what I mean.
No, I understand,
Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure seeing, and I'm sure, you know, obviously I can only speculate because I can't relate to it quite like you guys, but I can only imagine seeing the, like, racial struggles on the screen was probably even more appealing to you, right?
It's weird because, like, you can kind of feel and see yourself in, like, every single character in this movie. Like, not just in the fact that we're the same color. Like, there's, like, something about everybody in this movie that I can, like, resonate with and I can understand, from T'Challa to Killmonger to, you know, Shuri, maybe less the mom because, like, I'm no one's mom, but even, like, you know, M'Baku. Like, there's something about all of them that, like, I just inherently and intrinsically completely understand, that I just... Obviously, I can get that in other movies, but I don't have that same feeling in any other comic book movie. And, you know, again, a lot of that does have to do with the fact that, you know, we are, you know, we're Black, a lot of, just like the people in this movie, but in their characterizations, in the way that they, like, feel things and why they feel things and why they have certain reactions and what kind of responsibilities they feel like, they feel like, it's why I said this is one that probably is the most personable, not personal, God, the one that's the most personal. And, like, it's just the most easy to relate to.
Maybe even personable, too.
Maybe even personable. Yeah, like, everyone feels like your friend. Like, even that guy's like, I'm going to blow buildings up. I'm like, we'd hang out. Like, I'd ask him to stop.
Yeah.
We'd play 2K. Yeah, I'm like, hey, man, you're taking this shit a little too far. But, like,
you need to ease up a little bit. Yeah.
Like, can you pass me another slice? Like, but also.
You know, part of this, and I know we're kind of harping on this at this point, but, like, you don't see any of yourself in fucking Tony Stark, right? Like,
that's speak for yourself, right.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I know you're a tech genius. I get it. Yeah, but, like, it's hard to see any of yourself in the Hulk. It's hard to see any of yourself in all of the, you know, Captain America. All these different characters are just so, you know, and of course they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be superheroes. But right. I can only imagine, like, you know, and I think that's why this movie plays so fucking well, is because it's like you said, Chris, that's a really awesome thing.
Right, it is, and I was just about to bring this up, but it's also like the internal struggle, Chris, and we're talking about this when it comes to, like, the nation of Wakanda and then the surrounding tribes, and, you know, having their rituals as far as, like, who's going to be the Black Panther and for what tribe is going to be. But even, like, within those tribes, it's not so much like, oh, it's Wakanda against, like, the entire world, and they just want to see that fall of the white man, and he's oppressing them and all this other stuff. Like, it's a rich nation that clearly has its own resources and technology that are well beyond what the rest of the world has seen. I mean, their main resource being Captain America's, like, what Captain America's shield is made of, I think is massive, you know, because it's like Captain America was supposed to be, you know, he's the original Avenger, and he's somebody who wouldn't be as powerful as he was without his shield that he got from Wakanda. And so, like, I think that represents a lot too, because we've seen in real life and in movies where it's like, somebody gets all the notoriety, but then somebody behind him is actually the reason why he or she may be as powerful as they are. And, you know, I don't want to turn it to a completely racial thing, but it's like sometimes there's a powerful white man who has Black people doing all of the work behind him, and everybody thinks, like, he's just this genius, but he has all these people in his corner that nobody even knows about are doing all these things to make him, you know, to prep him up to be where he is. And, you know, of course, Captain America was genetically made, but his shield was pretty much the source of his power. And so to have that come from Wakanda, but we have the nation where of Wakanda, and we have all the surrounding tribes that are, they have a lot of infighting, you know, and it's just like, of course, we're not talking about, like, infighting where it's like, we're, you know, but holding people, you know, holding each other back or holding each other down. Like, even with M'Baku, he's like, you know, we've watched from the mountains and we've seen, you know, how rich you guys are, and you're not even spreading the wealth with us. You know, Chris, you know, looking at that and then just looking at, like, you know, today and just like the Black community, as far as, like, some people feel like, you know, the wealthy should support the Black, you know, community in every way possible. Like, you know, when a Black star, you know, is like, you know, don't forget where you came from, right? Like, don't forget your hood, thing like that. Like, it kind of feels like that with this movie, and when it comes to, you know, sourcing the vibranium and having it being, you know, the most powerful substance on earth. And, you know, and Wakanda's not even, you know, they're basically just holding it to themselves and not sharing. That also felt very relevant within the Black community, right?
Right, yeah, no, it does. I mean, you can look at the way that the Jabari, like, they're more tribal chants and the things that they wear, like, yes, they're, like, more casual clothes compared to what, like, the people on, I guess, more like the mainland are wearing. And, you know, it is, like he says, you know, we've been up in the mountains, you know, and we've seen what we've done with the technology. It's all run by a little girl who doesn't respect tradition. So, like, there's also this conflict with how, like, that part of the world has moved on, and maybe it's because, you know, they feel like they've been left behind, that they've clung on to, you know, tradition that way. And later on in the movie, not to get ahead, but, you know, when T'Challa is there, he's like, you're the first king to come up here in the centuries. Like, you know, people, nobody even came up here to offer us any kind of aid. No one offered us any of this technology. No one tried to say, hey, you know, we know the Jabari tribe lives there, but what about, you know, moving you guys more to the mainland, getting you out of the fucking freezing snow with, they don't have coats on, it's snowing, and they don't even have coats. Like, they're, his arms are out shirtless. There. Maybe he was just showing off that he's incredibly fucking jacked, but also it's like, hey man, there's snow all around you. Wear your sleeves, you know, like. And so that is one of those things. It's just like, you can see that for whatever reason, maybe it is just a bit of forgetfulness. Maybe it is just being so focused on other things, that there are people of your same people, you know, despite the fact it's another tribe, that has felt kind of left behind. You know, like, the thing that resonates with me the most is, and maybe resonates the wrong word, but the thing that I guess sticks out the most is when he says, you're the first king to come here in centuries. Again, that's jumping ahead, but it's part of the point now. He's like, so, like, you know, T'Challa's dad and T'Challa's dad's dad and all those other people who the Jabari tribe are integral part of Wakanda, none of them even went to visit them and see what their living conditions were like, or try to offer, you know, any kind of helping hand, or even not even necessarily to offer a helping hand, to see what life is like for them. And maybe that explains why every time they come on Challenge Day, they're the angriest people here. Like, like, guy showed up angry, man. Everyone else like, nah, we're cool, we're chilling, we respect you, we love you, we're not going to challenge you. And he's like, I'm going to throw you off this cliff and I'm going to rule right Wakanda. Now. And it's like, let's address that, maybe. Let's be friends, I think.
And that entrance was awesome, by the way. Like, them coming out of that tunnel slow motion, like the chants, dude, it gives me chills
the mask.
Every single time. Oh, my gosh, dude. And, like, Winston Duke coming out and just, like, yelling at everybody out there and then talking to T'Challa. And, oh, man, it, like, legitimately, that scene gives me goosebumps.
Talk about a dude who just showed up and was like, I'm a star now, by the way.
Literally. Oh, my.
I'm going to be in this movie real quick, and I'm going to become a massive deal, if that's fine with you. And that's what happened.
He basically he Mr. Mustang the movie industry. He just showed up in this, and everybody was like, who the fuck is that guy? And I need him in everything. Like, legitimately, he just came in and would just absolutely cook. But you're right, then it's great. And like I said, just talking about, like, the infighting of all the communities, and then having that being a source of internal struggle, but then, you know, what T'Challa's path is going to be going forward as he, you know, tries to be the new king and also be the Black Panther, and wants to honor his father, but at the same time he wants to rule as he sees fit. But flipping to Killmonger, Cole, and we talked about villains and villain entrances, I don't know that I've had, and it's weird to say, a favorite villain entrance. But him at that museum, talking about talking to that lady about the headpieces and just the different artifacts in that museum, I don't know that there's a cooler, better way to introduce a villain than the way he came.
That wide shot?
Like I said, my God, dude. Like, him just, him standing there and let's just talk about Killmonger and how, legitimately, how he might be one of our favorite villains just of all time.
Yeah, he's definitely up there for me, because he, like, there's also just something about Michael B. Jordan to where you just can't take your fucking focus off of him either, you know, no matter what else is going on in anybody, like Sylvester Stallone, it doesn't matter who's on screen with him, he just has that, and I don't even know what you would even call it, but he's just got it. And as soon as you see him from behind, and he looks very different than, like, he has in a lot of other movies, you know what I mean? He's got the badass fucking haircut. You immediately are like, oh, Michael B's here. Let's see what the fuck's about to happen. And him just fucking dunking on the, like,
oh my God.
The curator. The curator of the museum. Man, I couldn't even fucking come up with a word. I worked at a museum.
Because Michael B, man, he was so captivated.
He got me all fucked up, man. But
it happens to us, man.
Just dunked on her with all of, like, kind of the, you know, the history of Africa. And, of course, like, the whole plan was also really good, of course. And he just kind of established himself as this character that you knew from that moment on you were going to be conflicted by, because, one, you appreciated how smart he was, but you also appreciated just how fucking cool he was. You know what I mean? It was like, it's hard to see him and not be like, this is the coolest character in the movie. How am I not pulling for this guy?
Right, yeah, how am I not going to be in his corner? He told her, he said, I'm going to take this off your hands for you. And she was like, that's, she's like, it's not for sale. He's like, for sale. He's like, how do you think your ancestors got it here? And it was just like, immediately I was like, yes, I relate because I know exactly where this is going. But it's like, oh, fuck, wait, he's a bad guy. I'm like, I'm not supposed to be on his side.
Yeah, you can't pull for him. Yeah.
I was going to give her a stern talking to. Where'd that gun come from?
Right. It's like, I can't root for this guy, but I'm also wearing a Hey Auntie shirt right now. So, again, clearly it showed the imprint that he left on me and how I feel about him in this movie. But you're right. Like, he came in and he immediately established, but it wasn't, he didn't establish a ruthlessness. Like, a lot of times we see villains that are introduced and they're introduced by, you know, killing somebody or blowing something up, like you said, Kohler coming in. He came in, he's legitimately standing in a museum and he's talking to this curator and he's talking or giving her the history about these artifacts and where they actually came from. And, you know, it's like, okay, cool. Here's what's actually happening here. But as the movie goes on, we see, you know, just how ruthless he actually is. But we also see the reasoning behind that too. And like you said, and that's why we get so conflicted, because Chris, like we were talking about, when it comes to relating to somebody and being like, yeah, I think I would do that too. If you know, if this powerful nation like killed my, you know, if he found out he knows about his father and knows what happened and he's trying to get back to basically avenge that. I also feel like, you know, I put myself in his shoes and I definitely do feel like, yeah, I believe that. I understand that and I understand where he's coming from. While I wouldn't go, you know, kill a room full of people to get back, I also do see the anger behind his eyes and see what's actually going on. But yeah, we get Killmonger and he's on his, you know, his own his way, but we do get an introduction to T'Challa in a very great way as far as like his first mission. And we get to see the technology that Wakanda holds and just all the different things. I mean, we have like a young girl running R&D, you know, like of course his sister, but you know, she's running R&D and all the tech and giving him all his fancy weapons and suits and all that. Chris, as far as like, you know, him first going to rescue the children from their captors, and like just the way that whole scene just unfolded, like the technology, it's like, this is where they are, this is her position, you know, when he's going to get Nakia, this is her position in the truck, and you know, this is where you need to hit and all that. And like just like the quietness, like the stillness of that particular scene before he just attacks everybody, how awesome is that of an introduction for what would be our hero of the movie?
It's as cool as it gets, right? Like, and you know, if we're gonna speak about maybe having already seen him, like, sure, he shows up and he does some cool stuff in Civil War, and that's where I think a lot of people really got, you know, tuned into him. But if you hadn't seen that, or even if you had, the way that he just kind of shows up and is just moving through the trees, moving in the darkness, almost, I mean, he's attacking like an actual panther, like he has all this highly advanced tech, and there's something that is just really primal and instinctive about the way that he's fighting, or like Iron Man having all this crazy tech, but he is just right in front of people, the loudest, brightest thing, you know, in the environment. He's blowing stuff up. But T'Challa is bulletproof, but he's still kind of being super tactical. He's jumping through the trees. He's using the darkness to his advantage. And it kind of shows you, like, the technological advance, because these guys just have guns, right? They just have, like, guns and, like, a car. And you're like, oh, those are things that are just, like, are dangerous. There are other people in the MCU that, you know, a gun can make their, like, if you shoot Tony Stark, like, the credits would just start rolling, like, the movie's over. Right? Like, that movie's over. But, like, this guy, you know, you just see just how far ahead of them that this tech and this planning and, like, their insight puts them in. And he just, I mean, he just, it's so cool. Like I said, he's using the darkness, he's jumping between trees, and he cleans these guys up in, like, 1 minute. What, like, a way to introduce, you know, how he's going to operate and how he's going to move and what he's going to do in this movie. And he, like, continues to maintain that sense of like speed and like smoothness and just that way of fighting, and just like you feel like you're looking at an actual panther. Like, it's not just calling him Black Panther, but he's just doing like Brazilian jiu-jitsu the whole movie. Like, he's doing panther shit, and it's very cool. Right.
No, it's awesome. And just like you're saying, like him like moving through the trees. I mean, even just that one shot where like all of the bad guys are looking around to see what, you know, what stopped him, or because I think, what did he like blow out a tire or something, or like took, you know, disabled one of the lead vehicles, and you know, they shot the light
bead,
you know,
on it, up, shut it off
up in the tree, dude. Like that shot of him up in the tree, like that one, I mean, the light, like even Roger Deakins probably saw that shot and was like, fuck. You know, he's just like, this shot is
I gotta put a guy in a tree in my next movie.
Yeah, right. Like, I gotta, I got to make this thing happen, but it's just, I don't know, just the imagery of it. I know I'm just drooling over it, but rightfully
nah,
so.
It's cool,
the imagery,
man.
And I mean, it's just, the cinematography was
also
just
terrifying if you look back. I would have pissed myself. Even though I knew the Black Panther was, still would have had piss running down my leg. I'm not an athlete. You're not a real villain.
Yeah, you would have taken one of the bad guys to the side. He was like, I'm not trying to piss. I got to talk at you. Like, do you see that Black Panther up in the tree? Yeah. You see that Black Panther up there? Am I tripping?
Give me that goddamn
map. It looks
map.
Like that look. Am I tripping or do you see that Panther up there?
This looks like that. Like, nah, guys, nah.
No, look, I got
People's Choice Award in it for you.
A
Kids'
like Choice
that.
Award out of this. Yeah, MTV Kids' Choice Award out of this. I slime you the whole nine. But yeah, I mean, listen, this movie, it is great, but we get people.
He chopped the pants off Nixon and ran across the country.
That ain't he played ping pong.
Man, I almost just spit Dr. Pepper on my phone. Congratulations. You caught me off guard with that.
He chopped the pants off of Nixon
and ran across the country.
But we also get introduced to Claw as well, who is working with Killmonger, who Claw legitimately looks like he is going to be like the main bad guy in this movie, right? I mean, he has all of
it's the dirtiest Andy Serkis has ever looked, by the way. He has never looked like he has been further away from a shower. And like he has like a scene where he's wearing like very clean clothes and he looks nice. I'm just like, still look a little, like, did you wash your face? Right. Like, did you just change clothes? Like, you. And I know that's what they're going for. They're going for that kind of just like gritty, insane kind of look. And they certainly pull it off, but it's just so crazy. I'm just like, he looks dangerous and dirty. And you should only ever be one. You should never be both.
Yeah, he does. And I was just about to say, it looked like he hadn't showered since, since like, I can't even think of early. I mean, what was it? When
just drop
like
him
Age
off
of Ultron.
Kobe every night.
Yeah. Yeah, he hadn't showered since Age of Ultron, it looked like. Like, he'd just been dirty this entire time. After Ultron cut his arm off, he's like, yeah, well, I guess, but it is.
Can't give him
a
shower with
arm.
This.
It's true, right, yeah.
He walked up to Ryan Coogler and he goes, beds give me nightmares.
Beds give me nightmares. But I guess he was worried about getting in the shower, man, and getting that arm infected, you know? He's like,
yeah, I get it.
You know, that shower, man, it may have some hard water in the city or something, so I get it, you know? I definitely get it. But we do get introduced to Claw and you know, the dirty guy that he is. And he's the one who, according to Martin Freeman, stole all of the vibranium from Wakanda. And we get what is the rest of what the rest of the nation, the rest of the, especially the Marvel Universe is going to be introduced as like what Wakanda actually is. Whenever we have Claw, who is captured after he's going to, you know, get the diamond from the FBI, and that whole thing goes sideways, and they have the giant fight in what looks to be the Casino Royale. I mean, that dude, every time I see that scene, I think Casino Royale instantly. I think there's going to be like a giant Komodo dragon that comes and drags somebody off the set. But when he...
Oh, Skyfall, but yeah. I know.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, Skyfall. Yeah, Skyfall. Yeah. Sorry. I just think...
It had to be the same casino, right?
It looked like the same
place. It had the same vibes, man.
It felt just like I was looking for that shot over the chick's shoulder, you know, where she's waiting for Bond to come to the bar. But
that
woman, we get introduced
shaking the shaker, perfect.
Oh my god, we drooled over that particular shot for like half that pod.
Yeah, buddy. Let's do
it's
that
the good
one
stuff.
Again.
It's
I'm down. We can do.
You're saying it was a joke, but a re-release, the remaster.
I'm definitely down for a refall, man. I mean, we need to get through all of his movies anyway, so we can redo that one and then just we can skip Quantum, but we can do the rest though if you want. Let's do that. We'll do that twice and skip Quantum.
We're just back to back Skyfall. Yeah.
Yeah. People are like, "What the fuck? They just talked about this movie
the third time."
Yeah. But having Claw come in and then
how many suits do they own?
Not enough. I tell you that much. Not enough, sir. But with Claw coming in and him talking to Martin Freeman, and after he gets captured, he's telling Freeman, you know, because Freeman's like, this is the information that the CIA had, that they thought that Claw had stolen all of vibranium from Wakanda, and then that's when Claude informs him that he's like, I just stole a tiny little piece of it, you know? And then that's when, so Killmonger comes and breaks Claude out, and then we get Martin Freeman gets injured as they're having that interrogation scene. Chris, you know, taking Freeman back to Wakanda, and Freeman actually seeing what Wakanda actually has, and like the actual technology of it. That's actually a fair representation, as well as like the rest of the world actually getting to see how other nations operate, as opposed to just like what we see on TV or like the little bit of information we're fed. I mean, him getting back and basically getting paralyzed and being able to being held stable and being healed within the course of, I don't know, 36, 40 hours, like right. we also get an opportunity for him to see what actually is going on in Wakanda and seeing that it is more than just a poor nation.
No, it's the perfect way to kind of display that they are, again, just so far ahead of everybody. I don't know why I can't talk today. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, as much as the technology that we know about that's in the MCU, like all the Tony Stark stuff, all like the magic that they have, they say there's only one place in the world that he can go to be saved, and it's Wakanda. You know, and that is like hard to imagine. Like, you know, Tony Stark didn't have anything to fix it. And it's like, no, he doesn't. He doesn't have something that can remove a bullet and keep you from having spinal damage and have you back running around flying an airplane in 36 hours. No. He actually doesn't have that. He has a suit that's hot rod red, and that's it. So it is like another perfect way. It is, yeah. It's a nice thing to have. Just don't get shot in the back, or he can't help you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my guy.
What did she say? Like, she said, "We got to save another white boy or something."
Another broken white boy for me to fix.
Yeah. Love that shit, man.
Yeah, because that was clearly talking about Bucky, right?
Bucky, yeah. So, but I mean, man.
Bucky Buchanan from Saratoga.
From Saratoga, yeah. He went down there. He had skin cancer, man. He was in the sun too much. They had to help him out.
It sure did. From Saratoga.
Saratoga, man, that guy looked awful.
Yeah, he sure did, man.
You look sure bad. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
No, that was it. No, we covered it all. No. I mean, perfect way, and that's like the perfect scenario to kind of show that this is the only place to, and it also like doesn't let you leave that concern they have, because he's an internal affairs agent. So they're like, you know, once we show him this, his job is literally going to be to go back and tell him what he saw. And that's like a good character moment for T'Challa to show that, you know, he is willing to take that kind of risk. He's like, I can't let this person die. Not even for the fact that he saved someone that we care about. But he's like, but I can't. I'm just going to leave him here in this burning building. Like, what are we talking about?
Absolutely right. And so, and then we get an opportunity to like his first king moment, right, where he is at a crossroad morally or for his country or for his nation, as far as like what should I do and what will I do, and he makes the right decision, right? Yeah, it's definitely a watershed moment for him. So he has that. But Cole, we've already talked about Killmonger's initial entrance, but he also gets a second badass entrance whenever he is going back to Wakanda after he kills Claw. He takes Claw's dead body back to Wakanda, where he can enter in. He gets in with Daniel, you know, Daniel Kaluuya's character, Wakabi, takes him back into the city and takes him into the kingdom. And we get the "Hey, Auntie" moment as well. Like, again, a moment where we was like, man, I'm kind of on his side again. You know, like he
he's so cool.
What happened? And he's so fucking cool. Right. It's like, it's so cool, man. It's just like, I really like in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, he's like, fuck, you're cool, man. You know, we're like, they're out like,
right?
He's like, fuck, you're cool, man. He's like, well, you know what? When Sarah was showering earlier, I was listening to her iPod there, you know, amongst the senseless drivel that she has. I actually heard a couple of pretty good tracks. And you know what? I think it was you. It had like a real goth Neil Diamond feel to it. And he's like, dude, that's exactly what I'm going for. I was like, fuck, you're cool, man. Like, it felt just like that moment, man. Like, again, we're having to, we have a moment where it's like, man, I know he's a bad guy, but I totally am on his side. Another great entrance where he enters the kingdom of Wakanda, Cole, and then he's telling who his father was and all that. Again, another great moment, and we're just like, man, I'm kind of on Killmonger's side here.
Ask me who I am, King, is what he said. And then he said, no. I don't need the whole kingdom. I just need him and somebody to get these chains up off me, is what he said.
Jesus.
And
can't find out who says that.
it's just it's exactly like you might as well just fucking give up. It's like, all right, cool, right. You're king now. Captain now. I'm gonna go back to America. I don't know. Like, I think that it's another one of those scenes where he just has that gravitas that just shakes the whole fucking thing, and and you know everything about his character. Not everything just yet, but you know enough, right? Because you kind of got, again, we talk about this a lot, the back of the baseball card given from the CIA agent who was just kind of talking about like the deep shit he was in Iraq and all the kills and all that sort of stuff. And then you saw
MIT grad school, yeah,
shoot the shit out of his own girlfriend, you know, like we just knew this dude was a bad motherfucker. And then he comes in there and he's still got that charm and that coolness that, you know, Michael B. Jordan always fucking has. But yeah, I love that scene. I mean, every scene he's in is just like my favorite scene. You know, I don't know what it is about it, but that's just kind of the way it is, man.
No, he was great in legitimately every scene. Like when he's on the scene, when he's on the screen, it's just like, okay, well, this is the Michael B. Jordan show, and everybody else is just
he
like,
just commandeers the movie for a few minutes every once in a while.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, cool, I'm just gonna take this from here.
Yeah, he's like, I got it. You guys just, you know, guys do whatever you want, but I'm going to be over here being freaking awesome. But yeah, I mean,
Oscar winners.
Yeah.
This is my movie
sorry
now.
Sorry about this. But I'm going to do my thing, and I'm going to come back. And we have the challenge again where he wants to challenge T'Challa now and take what he feels like is rightfully his and what was taken from him. Chris, just going into that fight scene, we knew some bad shit was about to go down, right? We knew, like, it was written all over the wall, but just that fight that he had between him and T'Challa, like, it looked grim from the start, didn't it?
It did, man. Like I was saying, when he said, I don't need the whole, you know, the whole kingdom, I just need him and someone to take these, you know, chains off me. When a person is saying stuff like that, you're like, oh, they have a level of conviction that, like, you just can't. You can know every fighting style in the world, but, like, there's something
he
about a guy who's acting
in
like
half and then took his shirt
before
off
the fight.
Yeah, like, no, you're not started. Beating a guy like that.
You
man.
Can't.
Like, just quit. No. There's like, there's nothing. He was just like, you know what, this fucking weapon that was meant to kill people from distance isn't good enough for me. I'm gonna make it shorter.
To be shorter.
Right.
No, and it's
like that was pretty much like the Hector Achilles fight from Troy, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, man.
And I mean, and I won't interrupt you again, Chris. I promise.
No worries. No, sorry.
My favorite fight in all the Marvel movies I've seen because it's so stripped down, and it's like,
oh my god,
it's just two badass,
two dudes fighting,
very athletic guys, and you can tell. I don't know how much of it was actually them, but at no point did it ever feel like it was not them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Agreed. Right. Because so many fights we get are like between the Hulk and, you know, some alien being, or like Iron Man,
which
or
are
Tony
all
Stark
badass
in a suit, or 100%. But this is like just two dudes just duking it out.
Oh no! I was just, you know, saying, you know, knowing that it's bad from the start. It's the scene that we had just gone over. He's just got this, like, the energy, the conviction that he has. Like, even, you know, stepping out of the fact that, you know, it's a movie and they have to have some kind of stakes. Like, just the gravitas, like the his aura. You know, he's not losing.
Aura.
Like, you're just not beating that guy. And, like, his physicality compared to T'Challa's, you know, he's going to be stripped away of the powers and, like, the back of the baseball card stuff. Like, everything about this just feels like, you know, he said his whole life has been about getting to this one moment. And I'm like, man, T'Challa, I know that you are, like, the Black Panther and you care about your people and you have a real passion, but I don't think you're going to win this one. But there's not enough.
That anger really does.
Yeah. There is not enough training in the world that's going to get you past like that level of conviction. When you kill your own uncle and you're like, I'll bury you, you know, I'm going to bury both of you. You're not being a guy that's talking like that.
Yeah, hang that shit up, buddy, because it's a wrap after that. It is a wrap. But we get what we think is, you know, the downfall. Well, of course, it's the downfall of T'Challa. We think, you know, we know that.
Obviously, he threw him off the edge. You don't even have to do that. Like, they weren't closing in. He picked him up.
Emphasize.
Right. Like, there wasn't the circle shrinking. There wasn't, like, they were fighting and he, you know, ultimately had to. He was, like, 30 feet away from
him
and picked
him
up.
He bear crawled him 6 miles to throw him off the fucking waterfall, man.
Listen. Listen, he was
dangerous
real
fellow.
Mad, buddy. Real, real mad about it. And I don't know that I can blame him. Again, we knew exactly what was happening. And so we have the fight, and we get Killmonger, who is now the Black Panther and has taken over the throne. But we get what is an extremely, that whole scene is emotional. Of course, we have Zuri, he steps in and he gets killed by Killmonger. We have T'Challa thrown, he's stabbed and thrown over the waterfall. But then we also get Killmonger's backstory, and we saw what was at the beginning of the movie. We get that to come back full circle, Colin, and we'll talk about this and just like how emotional that scene was. But we get young Killmonger as a child talking to his father, and then we see, this is who this was at the beginning of this movie. And now we get to see like the full back circle as far as just that scene between young Killmonger Eric and Sterling K. Brown. How awesome was that scene, in particular Sterling K. Brown?
Yeah, and that's exactly right, Keith. Like, Sterling K. Brown was awesome in this. Michael B. Jordan was awesome in this. And it was one of the kind of rare scenes in this movie specifically that just tugged on your heart and your kind of like consciousness in a way, right? Like, there are other things in this movie that do that to you, but this was one of those scenes that was just kind of like gut-wrenching. And you had already had that, like we've talked about, that kind of weird affection for, Killmonger, even though we probably shouldn't have. But when you see this scene play out the way it did play out, and it's kind of a ballsy move to put this in the middle of your movie too, right? Because like
right in the middle.
I felt like the ones with Chadwick Boseman and his dad, those I kind of could live without. And this was the complete opposite of that, where it was just like, fuck, man, this is like some of the best acting in the movie, some of the best like dialogue of the movie, definitely the best screenwriting that we see throughout the whole film, because it's so raw and it's so integral to the story and us understanding Killmonger and his drive, more so than just being this evil guy that wants to destroy the world, because that wasn't it at all.
Right. It at first we see him and he's like, another person out for world domination. And then we get his full story and we're just like, oh shit. Okay. So then at this point, if the audience wasn't like 100% in his corner, like we're shifting to a lot more people being in Killmonger's corner and being like, well, I understand. Like, I kind of get where he's coming from and I understand, but also it gets us to understand his pain, which I think is really important, because it gets when it comes to having people like sympathize with a character like this, like we have to feel his pain. And that scene, like, Cole, I think you're absolutely right. It absolutely helps us to feel his pain and lets us see what exactly was going on with him internally and externally, and all things above. Like, we just, when he comes back from being so, going back to where he was talking to his father, what he felt like his father, like how emotional he was. And he was just like with T'Challa, whenever he saw his father, he was like, he was there. I saw him, I talked to him, and it was just, just a great moment. And it was, to me, that was a great emotional moment. And it did trump the initial, whenever T'Challa did see his father at first, but then the second one, I feel like made up for it whenever, after T'Challa was brought back, after he was thrown off the well.
Yeah, he's like, hey, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? Why did you leave him there? And like, perfect. Like, that is a big part of his character. Yeah. Like, why did you do this? Like, not even for the fact that I got stabbed and thrown off a cliff because of it, but like, hey, that was the worst thing you've ever done, I think. You killed his dad and you left him on the street playing basketball. What the hell?
Right. Literally just left him down there. Like, we couldn't have brought him back and done whatever. He just left
to fend for himself,
you know? So having that conversation, I felt like, was extremely important, because he was like, it helped mold him again as a leader and as a king. And he was like, when he yelled at his father, he's like, you were wrong. It was like, you shouldn't have left him. That scene, I felt like, ratcheted up the emotion. It's about emotionality. Where is it? That ratcheted up. you see how agitated he is right now. Let's make lemonade. But
he did. You cry when your arms blew up?
Dude, he was smoking a cigar with hooks, man.
With that hook, man.
And he just shook his head. Oh, my God. Every single time. But, yeah, I mean, that's the emotion was definitely there. But now we have Killmonger in charge, and we see the plan that he wants to make going forward. Then whenever we see him in power and we see like him burn all the what's left of the herbs besides the one that Nakia took, Chris, at this point we are starting to shift out, but it's good movie making because we're starting to shift away from like sympathizing from him to being like, okay, actually he is kind of a bad dude and we really don't need to be in his corner as much as we feel like we should be.
Yeah, and I think it goes to show maybe that thing of like, when people get power, you know, sometimes their true colors will show what they're like really about, what they really kind of want. And of course, we've known his goal, you know, pre him winning the fight and pre him getting the heart-shaped bird. But, you know, once he mm-hmm. is in that position of power where he can call those shots, you know, he's to the point of like, burn all this. There's never going to be another one after me. You know, we're going to yep. arm these people. We're going to send all these people out. So like now that he has, you know, essentially in his mind, he's accomplished his goal. He went back home and he, you know, he won the throne. And now, you know, you're getting to a point where he's turned that corner to where the thing that's going to, you know, corrupt him to the point where you can fully realize like, okay, this is the bad guy. Like, yes, he's cool. Yes, there are parts of his, you know, ideology that I can agree with and understand. But, you know, now he is, you know, he's taking it too far. You know, he's sending vibranium weapons, a thing that only, you know, what, two people outside of Wakanda truly know about. He's just sending those out in the world to just be thrown on the streets and being given to people to, you know, lead what he thinks is just going to be this perfect revolution and not think about the, you know, the true effects of what's going to happen. And, you know, that's the moment, as cool as a shot is of him watching all that stuff burn, that's where you're mm-hmm. just like, ah, there it is. Defend, like,
there it is.
I don't know if there's a redemption here. Like, I knew he was a bad guy already because, you know, he was, you know, killing people, but that's when you're really just like, all right, someone's gonna have to go after this. You know, they had a gunfight after this, and someone had to go.
Somebody had to go. But right, I think we as an audience needed that moment to shift us back to kind of open our eyes and see what he was actually about. And we knew, I think we were holding on to hope is like, maybe if he gets there and he sees the kingdom and he sees what his father had told him about and he sees kind of his upbringing, his origins, his belonging, he may shift, but it's like, no, actually he still just wants to be a terrible dude.
He's actually even more angry now.
Right, exactly. And so we needed that as a whole to be able to shift us to that. But we get that moment with him, and then we also get where we have we have, you know, of course his, you know, Suri, and we have Nakia, and we have Ramonda. We go to M'Baku's kingdom. And they have, you know, they have T'Challa's body, and they're trying to get the help of that nation. And we get T'Challa is revived. You know,
the guy that mentioned like a fresh cod. It's so funny.
I know.
Like a fish market or whatever. That's what he looks like. Oh my
god, dude! He was.
Someone's gonna toss him to someone. Carp be upon him.
Hey, catch him in some parchment. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Get about two more of these, actually.
Yeah. So we get the help of M'Baku and his tribe, Chris, and he is fully justified in his answering when it comes to that particular scene, though. But just take me through that scene and just how good everybody was, in particular Winston Duke. And we got to see truly the great actor that Winston Duke is.
He's phenomenal, man. He conveys that message of, you know, like, yeah, you know, we had the thing at the tribal fights, and, you know, you did spare my life and told me my people need me, and I've gained some respect for you, so, you know, I would save your life because, you know, you spared my life, I saved your life. But it's just like, but at the same time, you guys haven't tried to help us. And I know that you've been king for all of 15 minutes before this guy stabbed you, but it's just like, but man, like, we have been left out here abandoned, you know, even on, you know, challenge day, you show up, you kick my ass, and then you send me back to the mountains. Like, what the hell? So it's like, he does a great job of going through this thing of, like, this guy who does, you know, genuinely respect all of them, and he honors a tradition, and he knows, you know, that's their leader. Like, that's the Black Panther, that's the King of Wakanda. But as the leader of his people, he's also just like, no, I'm not going to send any of my people to die for you because you haven't done anything like that for us. I won't let you die, and your mother will be safe here, and I will do, you know, my respectful duties, but I can't engage with you beyond that. And it goes so far beyond just the way that Winston Duke is saying it, but kind of his mannerism, that he does kind of have this kind of closed off nature to him. He sells that scene really well. That is maybe some of his best work in the whole film. And you buy the whole thing. You don't think it's just a guy puffing his chest out, saying like, no, you know, throwing a tantrum, being like, you didn't help me, I'm not going to help you. It's a guy who genuinely feels hurt by the way that his people have kind of been forgotten about up there. And again, like I said, you can understand. He said no one has ever been up there to see them in centuries. He didn't say years. He didn't say decades. He said it's been centuries since anyone's been up here. So great job by him.
Very long time, but and like you said, we completely understand, because it's like, why would I help you? You've never even been up here. You don't even know what we're doing up here. Like, you know,
right.
You know, you're the first king to ever.
You guys aren't even dressed for snow. You didn't know it snowed up here, did you? Look at you. You got your
right.
toes
yeah,
out
exactly.
and shit.
It's like, you had no idea. Y'all are up here.
Leg.
It's frozen, you got Crocs though. On. Yeah. piss frozen to your leg. Yeah, exactly. Like, it has no idea
Mix
what's happening.
The sword
here,
stick.
Yeah, right, exactly. Makes the sword stick. What
Maximus,
a man! What a nice transition to Gladiator there. Yeah, he's up there fighting. He takes
I
out
can
seven
get a sword
guards.
Out Maximus fucked him out. That's tough.
It's real tough out here, man. But we get, you know, we have T'Challa, and he is revived after he is helped by the Jabari tribe, and, you know, M'Baku helps him out, and he's like, but it's just so funny whenever they're having that heartfelt moment, he's like, he just yawns, like, are you finished? Are you finished? Like, that scene kills me, man.
He's hilarious, but he's so good. Dude,
the way he enunciates in this is,
oh,
like, one
it's
of my
perfect.
Favorite
it's,
fucking things. Like, I love it, so because good. It's weird. Like, the choice of places he enunciates very powerfully are just, like, the ones you would never expect. And I've seen it, like, three or four times now, and I'm always like, oh, yeah, I remember this now. And then I'm like, oh, wait, I don't remember what he's going to do next, you know?
Yeah.
He's when like, he's down there at Challenge Day?
I'll feed you to my children.
He says, we did not have
it. Vegetarians.
Yeah.
Why does he say have it?
Yeah, yeah, have it. Yeah.
We will not
we
have
will
it.
Not
like,
have
what? It. I've never heard anyone say that like that before. I know, like, actual Africans that don't say it like that. It's just so funny, dude.
His is somehow the most unrealistic and the most realistic at the same time.
It's like, yeah, man, why are you putting so much emphasis on the V in habit? What's going on? Like, what's happening there?
I just wanted everybody to know. He said, I don't drop characters to the DVD commentary.
I'm head to toe legitimate.
I'm head to toe legitimate.
He dead, man.
He dead. This motherfucker dead, yo. This ain't no David Blaine horseshit jumping off.
Step on a landmine. You want to get shot by a real motherfucker?
You want to get shot by... That's a legitimate question, though. Do you want to get shot by a real motherfucker?
I don't want to get shot by a real motherfucker.
Or step on a real landmine.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No shit.
Not.
That might be worse, actually.
No, that'd definitely be worse. 100%.
I don't know. You'd die real fast.
That would just suck, though, man.
Blow off a limb, though, and you're still just, like, writhing in pain. No thanks.
Oh, yeah. I guess a toe popper. Just buzz
absolutely
off your knees.
Not. Absolutely not. No thanks. But we get the, you know, we have T'Challa's revived, and so now we have to go back to Wakanda and take the nation back. And so we have what is a, now we have a redemption story, but we also have kind of like T'Challa is it's also figuring out what kind of king he wants to be, but he has to get his nation back from what will be, will we have a divided nation, because then we have Daniel Kaluuya's character, who we hadn't even really talked about, but we also have, you know, we have Daniel in this
also
movie.
Also crazy
well,
that he's
kind
in
of
this.
Just a side person, you know. I mean, he, of course, one of the bigger actors. I mean, he also somebody who has come around and just like, you know what? I'm going to be the greatest actor that you're going to see. Like, him and Winston Duke are both just like, you want to see the greatest acting? Yeah, everybody chill out real quick. I'm going to show y'all something real cool. And they're just like the greatest performances ever. But we have, you know, Wakabi, who's now.
Yeah, that's
on,
kind of like the only like bummer about this movie is that like he's so fucking good, and this part's kind of boring for him. You know what I mean? It's
yeah,
like
right.
It's not.
It like,
he
four
isn't
scenes.
Boring as it, but it's just kind of a boring role, like, because it's like we should any movie Daniel Kaluuya is in, we should probably be talking about him for 90% of the movie, right?
Correct.
Like that's like what we should be talking about, but it shows like. The character wasn't bad. I don't mean it like that. It just, you know, it didn't have a ton of complexity to him. You know, he kind of sympathized with Michael B., of course, and Michael B. was the like true heavy of the movie, so it would be hard to make this character work. But it always, like, it's so weird because, like, that dude has an Oscar. What is he doing as this part right now?
I have an Oscar, and I'm calling you back!
Yeah. Again and again, you fucking asshole.
Again and again and again, you cocksucker. Yeah. Just give us a check. Dude, it's, man, that crying crushes me, man. He is sobbing, trying to get a check from Vince.
I have an Oscar. I'm calling you back.
I'm calling you back. But now we have, T'Challa trying to come back and get his kingdom. You know, be the rightful ruler of his kingdom.
I'm gonna get my show back.
Right, exactly that. He wants to get.
Never had a
back,
chance to
man.
Make that reference before.
No, that was absolutely perfect. That's Oprah. Oprah, dude. Whenever he punches Stedman, like they're
when
both laughing.
He's
like,
laughing
Stedman, we're gonna get this bitch, and they both laughing. And he just stands up and he punches him. That dude, that absolutely takes me out. Like,
I'm watching that episode tonight, actually, as soon as we get done.
He is going to get his show back, for sure. And so now we have the plan. But now we're using Martin Freeman, who's actually helping Zuri, as far as he sees all the technology that Wakanda has. And he sees, like, we know that he was a naval pilot in the Air Force. And so we have an opportunity for him to see what all technology they have, but also be on their side. And so, but I think it works really well, because then he sees the technology that they have, but also that he's seeing that it's been used for good. Cole, when it comes to a massive discovery like that on his part, especially the U.S. government, and we know, obviously, we could take this part up to a completely different subject, but, you know, the U.S. government and using or, you know, not using a weapon like that or technology like that for the greater good, but him seeing that technology and seeing how it can be used and seeing how strong it is. How great is that he is now on the side of the Wakandans, basically, and helping them out, and then being able to, you know, take that information back and use it for good and not to exploit the Wakandans and their technology.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of nailed it. I don't have a ton to add to that, but, like, I mean, truly, like, he kind of, it is interesting and cool, because it's, like, very much a, you know, it's much as this character is supposed to be a small part of the film, he ends mm-hmm. up being a very powerful ally as far as helping Wakanda, but also realizing that his own people would use this sort of technology for not necessarily good, as opposed to the way that King T'Challa and the people of Wakanda are using this technology. So it is pretty interesting in that he is able to rationalize that and figure out, not necessarily rationalize it, but understand that and use it as a way to keep those weapons from getting around and getting into the wrong hands, right?
Right, exactly. And he used it, of course, the best was benefited, and then helped the Wakandans and helped the weapons not get back and be used in a poor manner, like Chris was saying earlier. Just put these weapons out on the street and just hope for the best. Like, this, like,
the worst things in history would happen if those weapons were straight.
That's not the kind of revolution.
Let a vibranium gun end up in Mississippi. Anywhere. Watch. Right. Watch right, how right. all of society crumbles.
Crumbles in a complete heat. Right. Like, that was the kind of revolution that Killmonger was looking for. But right, like, you know, we have Martin using the technology to help the Wakandans and to keep the weapons inside their force field, basically inside the nation. And so we have, you know, everybody's fighting, and we have Bobby's character. He is, you know, fighting, basically, essentially helping Killmonger. But then we also have all the, you know, basically the nations are split, and we have Killmonger, who is architect of all the division. And so we have all that happening, and everybody's fighting. And then we get M'Baku, who comes back, but ends up being a pivotal return on his part, where he actually is helping out Wakanda, is helping out T'Challa. T'Challa is talking about and helping what would be a great regime on T'Challa's part. How important, Chris, is that with M'Baku coming with the Jabari tribe and helping them out to make sure that Killmonger's vision doesn't successfully go through?
It's just the best way to bring him out of that, right? Like, to let him get over, you know, that kind of resentment that the Jabari have kind of on his own. And I guess it is a bit influenced by T'Challa, you know, saying that, I know the other kings have come up here, but I'm not like them. Like, I'm here now, mm-hmm. and I'm, you know, offering this hand, and I'm, you know, I'm asking for your help, you know, not just for your tribe, but, you know, for Wakanda, for your people as a whole. And, you know, so for M'Baku to kind of decide that, you know, this is maybe a bit bigger than the grievances I have with the people that came before him, and to show up and to, you know, help. I mean, when they all like show up and they're doing the chant again, like it's just hype. Like Marvel has like a couple of like really cool, just like people showing up at the nick of time. Somehow it always happens in Wakanda, but like, it's just hype that, you know, it seems like it's kind of like, it's not even terrible for T'Challa because he has a suit on, but just knowing that M'Baku and all of, you know, the Jabari tribe have changed their mind. They are going to be a part of the fight now. It's cool. You know, it's the best way, like, I think to show him kind of getting over that. I'd rather be that than, you know, after T'Challa stops him, all of a sudden he's like, you know what? I changed my mind about you. Like, no, like, he changed his mind and decided to join the fight and be a part of this cause.
Right, which is great, of course. And of course, it's going to help T'Challa's legacy and his regime to have other tribes believe, you know, what helping other tribes than having them believe that he is actually going to be there to help, and not be somebody who is going to neglect them or take advantage of them, as other kings have done in previous rules and regimes. And so them coming back to help out, and then ultimately we have T'Challa and Killmonger, we have their fight at the end, and we have T'Challa getting the best of them down in the subways. That's temporarily, you know, as the subways are going through, it temporarily takes away his protection for both of them, and we get that fight. And so we have, again, we feel badly for Killmonger as he's talking about, you know, my father always talked about the sunsets and what kind of the most beautiful things ever. And we have T'Challa taking him up, and we see the heart that he has. And of course, we know somebody as a king, just as a person, is soft hearted and very kind. He's going to take Killmonger up there to see that sunset and see what his father had been telling him about. And so we have the movie wraps, and we get, you know, we do see, you know, everybody is happy, of course, for the most part. And we get the nation is back into the rightful hands of T'Challa, and he's going to lead this nation as he sees fit. And he's also going to share with the world the resources that this country has. And he feels like this is how it's going to be, you know, under my rule, done the right way, we can help ourselves and we can help others. And then he returns to the spot where Killmonger's father was initially killed, and he's going to use that as the research and development center for Zuri. And so we have a great way to wrap that in, but it's also great because we're talking about like the way that the Wakanda was supposed to be used in the first place, right? Like, we have the resources used correctly, and the technology isn't just stored and stashed away just for them to use. It's to use for everybody, for the greater good, of course, for the most part, and make sure that everybody is taken care of.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like you said, they have that, you know, that that outreach center there in Compton or whatever, to kind of, you know, bring in kids and kind of let them see what this technology is capable of, and to just use the technology that they already have in Wakanda to try to make the world a better place. And they said they're going to open up Wakanda to the world, and we're going to do what we can to solve all of our problems, you know. And granted, that'd be like a perfect thing in the world in general, but especially in the Marvel universe, given that, you know, all the other super wacky things that the world is probably dealing with, it's nice to know that there is this, you know, this resource and these people with this vast knowledge and this technology that they're willing to use to try to, you know, help to solve problems. And not to jump ahead, but I think in the new movie, you know, Ironheart, Riri Williams is someone who they end up recognizing her intelligence in one of these outreach programs. They bring her in, and she builds a fucking Iron Man suit. So it's just showing that, you know, using this and using their technology and their outreach to try to essentially fix the problems that Killmonger saw with the world, rather than, you know, giving people guns and, you know, blowing up systems. It's like, you know, we're going to try to better these areas by, you know, just improving on them in a more natural, less demonstratively dangerous way.
Right. And as resources should be used. And so it's a great way to wrap up and then start to utilize the resources in other parts of the world and make sure that other people are taken care of, and to also really bolster the outlook that is of Wakanda, right? And to show people like, hey, this is what we have, and this is the kind of gracious country we can be. We want to share with you and make sure that people have the ability to utilize what we have in the proper way. And so, you know, getting into the categories, I feel like that this movie has it's all these categories were pretty easy for me, but there's, you know, multiple.
Yeah, me too.
Really good. I mean, like, looking at everything, I'm like, yeah, this person. Even before I watched the movie, I was already like, this is going to be my LOL. This is going to be my Mr. Mustang. And I don't think I deviated much, but I actually like for my laugh out loud, I did like the whenever T'Challa and Shuri are in the lab and going through R&D, and she's showing him all of the, you know, the suits and all the tech that she's been working on, and she's talking about essentially the what are those, like capitalizing on what are that particular phrase at that moment was hilarious. But when she's talking about, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I have this, these new shoes that I have, they're going to absorb the sound, and so you can walk through any room undetected. She's like, I call them sneakers, dude. That
I knew you would love that, man.
Hilarious. Hilarious. Like just to call those sneakers, and they were just,
and
so
just
like
smiling when she said it, right? You know? Like
such a practical joke, such a layup, like low-hanging fruit. But dude, it was brilliant, man. Like it kills me every time when she says that. So that is my particular laugh out loud. What is yours, Chris?
Mine is also from around that same scene. So it's when she's trying to explain the kinetic energy thing, and mm-hmm. she says, hit it, and he kicks that shit across the room. She goes, not so hard, genius. Like, yeah. It's so funny. You're like, you expect him just like give it like a light punch. He kicks it across the fucking lab.
Knocks the shit
and
out
she's
of that,
like,
dude.
Not that hard, dude. What's wrong with you? It's, man, that's just hilarious to me. Like, that being the reaction, like if someone told me to hit, like I'd like give it like a light punch or maybe something with a little force, but I mean, he sends that shit like he's in the World Cup, and it just like ragdolls in the air, just hits the ground. It's
yeah,
so
man,
funny.
It just flies.
I bet he was in there taking karate with the little kids. Ain't you little
karate?
Shit out of my
All right, Cole, what was your laugh out loud?
Caught it
with front kick.
Ah, when he's flying in the air.
Now that you mention it.
The mirror bleeding in my chest.
For me, man, it was actually right at the beginning, when dude looks out the peephole and says, "You're two Grace Jones looking chicks, man." That shit took me out. I spit my drink out, man. Yeah, because like as soon as he opens the door, you see him, and it's like, "Holy fuck, they're Grace Jones!"
Exactly, it too. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And like, man, Grace Jones kind of just like just the shit, anyways, and just getting kind of that. The kind of the hat nod there was fucking awesome.
It was great, but also a joke that is, especially in the black community, is like, I know exactly what he's talking about. So when they walked in, it's like, oh shit, they do look exactly like Grace
Jones.
Just
like her. Yeah.
Like the whole theater just erupts, man. It's so funny. But yeah, those definitely some good ones. I already touched on this one, Mr. Mustang, but I went with Sterling K. Brown. I thought he was incredible, man. I mean, he just came in, basically he just had two scenes, but man, just like the emotion that he displayed in those couple of scenes. And again, just a movie like this, just to casually have Sterling
K. Brown,
Forrest
been a favor.
Whitaker, Angela Bassett, Danny, right? Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. Sterling K. Brown was just like, I just want to be a part of this.
Do this in 3 days? All right, cool.
All right, cool. You want me to come in and act the shit out of this? Okay, yeah, I got you. No problem at all. So that was, he was incredible. That was my Mr. Mustang. Chris, who was yours?
Same person, Sterling K. Brown. He just does a phenomenal job. He's like, I think the only person who has to switch between acting like a, you know, just like a regular American, and then he has to, you know, in that same scene now go back to completely change his like demeanor and his, you know, his accent and his tone and everything to be a Wakandan. And again, I know that's just acting, but you know, he's just really good in the scenes that he's in. Right, the scene with the heart shaper where Killmonger sees him. It's good. Stuff incredible. It's like as good as it's one of the best scenes in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's just that good. So I mean, he's phenomenal. You almost wish you could see more of him because he's so good, but at the same time, like the amount that you get is perfect for the story. But at the same time, I'm like, we could have got him to say a couple more words. I think this is just too good to not see any more of.
Yeah, I was captivated, and again, but this also perfect because he played Michael B. Jordan's father, and we were also captivated by him every time he was on screen. So like the two people who just absolutely stole the scenes when they were in, it was those two guys, and they were father and son. So it was like, okay, well, this is just perfect casting then. So Cole, Cole, who'd you have as your Mr. Mustang?
Queen Sweet, man, Sterling K. Brown. Like, that guy's just a shit, you know, like there's not any more I can add to what y'all have already said, except for the fact that he's one of those actors, like you said, Keith, that just kind of will change a scene in no time, and to put out a scene like the two that he was in, right? And both of them were just very, very heartfelt and awesome. So that's mine too.
That guy can do an emotional scene, man. Like, even like the gifs and the memes of him being emotional. I'm like, I know this gif is supposed to be funny, but holy shit, this is the best acting I've ever seen in a 2-second video clip. What's going on? You ask Sterling K. Brown to cry, and everyone's gonna cry. Actually,
legitimately,
he just has it, man.
Yeah, he just
has that voice is just buttery. Yes,
right, like, yeah, dude, yeah, unbelievable. Unfreaking believable. Everything he's in, it's like, okay, cool. Well, I'm gonna be in this. Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, I'll watch
like,
this.
Yeah. Like him, Mahershala Ali is like, okay, cool. Yeah, got it.
Oh, yep, fuck, man. Mahershala's. Yep, yep. He's got it too.
Big time. So Jameis Winston, I end up going with. It was this. This one was a little tiny bit difficult, but I end up going with Forrest Whitaker's character as the uncle. I feel like he was. He just
a good choice.
Yeah, he of course he was kind of a double agent in the beginning, and then he gets Killmonger's father killed. He kind of set all of this in motion. Of course, King T'Chaka was the one who did it, but kind of get all this set in motion, and then he gets stabbed whenever Killmonger and T'Challa are trying to save T'Challa. He ends up being stabbed and dies right there at the waterfall. Yeah, he pissed down his leg. Not really an athlete. Gets stabbed in the chest. He didn't put up a fight whatsoever. Film. He fell hotter. He fell. Don't go chasing waterfalls like TLC did, but he chased him anyway.
So he did chase him.
So that's why. So that was my Jameis Winston. Was his name was Zuri before his weirder character. Chris, who is your Jameis?
Mine is, I guess, a bit of a broad, but I guess all the previous kings and, you know, royalty for, ooh, you know, kind of the division that they sowed, man. I mean, you know, we can certainly put a couple of them on King T'Chaka as far as, you know, killing his brother. And of course, he had a reason to do that. You know, his brother was trying to kill Zuri and he had to stop him. And it was unfortunate. But also, you know, to just leave Michael B. Jordan's character behind, to ignore some of the other people in the world that could have used Wakanda's help. And then all the previous kings did the exact same thing. I mean, all the other things in the world, you know, outside of Wakanda, for one, you know, to not get engaged with, but even more important in a way, the things within Wakanda. I hate to say it again, but the Jabari tribe were just, they were ignored, man. It's a whole tribe of people, a whole people who, you know, came in at your son's darkest hour to help him out. But, you know, you and all of your predecessors for the entire time you guys are there, you just kind of ignored them. So, I mean, they, you know, they had it easy, but they kind of fucked it up for everybody. And luckily, you know, they were able to overcome it. But I mean, man, they really just set everybody outside of the people literally on that main Wakandan island just back so much by not helping them out where they could, or abandoning. I mean, ultimately, they just abandoned a lot of people. And that caused a lot of problems in this movie. Quite literally caused all the problems in this movie, actually.
Yeah. Everything is set, everything in motion. Good fucking answer. Unfortunately. And that was a really good answer. So good luck, Cole, with your Jameis Winston.
Who is it? I'm changing mine to Chris's. I think he's got it. He's got it nailed on that one. But I, you know, to follow that up with the worst possible answer, I went with Claw because I hated his geeky ass fucking arm. Yeah. It's the same thing as we were talking about in Shang-Chi with the fucking razor fist guy. It's like, do we need this? Like, he has a cannon on his arm. We don't need this shit, bro. Just like, make him kill people. It's fine.
It was kind of gross. Dude. It was like whole hand.
And he was just fucking annoying too.
He was kind of funny. He had a couple.
Yeah, he had a couple. He got a couple in.
He did. He went until they got the beginning. He's like, "Hey, you can go. You're good." And he shot him in the back. He's like, "The scene needs to be spread out. This so don't look like some amateurs."
Yeah.
He didn't mean that.
So Rince Du, I went with Michael B. Jordan. Now they're going to be cute. He was amazing as Killmonger. I feel like this is a role that is very different, very atypical of the characters that he's played in his career leading up to this. And he was just absolutely believable. I mean, we've gushed over the entire pod, I feel like, and just how he stole every scene and just how captivating he was. So this was that was my Rince Du. I don't want to get too funny or cute on it. So that's why I went with Chris. Who's yours?
Same person, Michael B. Jordan. He was certainly well known. I mean, he was in Creed, he was in Fruitvale Station. So, you know, people who know already knew about him. But as we've kind of talked about before, you get in an MCU movie as some kind of lead role, and that can take you to that next level. And man, I mean, that's what happened to him here. It wasn't just because he was in one. He was in this, and he was phenomenal. I mean, he has like a lot of quotable things. He has a lot of relatable things. He is a lot of people's favorite character in this movie. He's a lot of people's favorite villain in the MCU. A lot of people's just favorite character in the MCU. Just so right. many great things come from his performance and just a lot of stuff to latch on to. And again, he was already pretty well known, but I mean, he did this, he bodied this role. It wasn't going to happen, but I saw people genuinely like in those early reviews and before me were saying like, he should get an Oscar for this. And from the moment, from the beginning, I knew they were probably taking it too far, sure. but people don't always say that about comic book movies. So like, you know, once I see, and granted it's people who are fans, but once I see like anybody, you know, giving that much praise to a character, you have to realize that, you know, they did something to some degree a little atypical for the genre, and man, he really, really knocked it out of the park with this.
No, he did. No, like he went into this, he's like, okay, bet, like I'm gonna give y'all something to chew on. All right, Cole, who is Rent Due for?
It's Queen Sweet. I'm sure yes, y'all sir. Saw that one coming because yeah. you know I've gushed about him the whole time. But he
it's like his jean jacket. Jean yeah, jacket sales like definitely went up after this movie. I think
the hair and the jean jacket, man. It's like cool. You know what else? What else do you need? But no, I mean I think everything y'all said is true, and I also think that like this is an impossible character to nail in this exact instance, and he did it right. Like yeah. there oh, is the amount of times that this character goes wrong. Is in a Marvel movie or in any huge franchise movie, it's probably 99%, right? Because it's like, there's no way to make this character work. And Michael B. Jordan makes it fucking work. And that is in and of itself what Rent Due has to be about. And you can tell that it really did mean a lot to him. And even if it meant, you know, terrible things to him, he completely embodied this role, and that's saying a lot because there was a lot of great actors in this movie, including, you know, Chadwick Boseman, who in many ways like was the winner of this movie, right? Because he
no became doubt.
This huge cultural figure that a lot of people looked up to. So it just speaks to just how good Michael B. Jordan was in it.
So good.
We're saying about how like there was just a real challenge. I think part of that does come from that thing that you said Michael B. Jordan has where when he's on the screen, you just can't help but to focus on him. Like it.
Yeah.
It maybe isn't the most complex role in the world, but it's hard to imagine someone else doing it because we can't think of many other people who have that thing that you're talking about that, you know, he can read the lines and he can have the conviction, but he has to have that thing that just makes you, just makes him stand out to beyond everyone else, despite the things that he's doing. And it's just, Michael B. Jordan has that, and there are a lot of other people that, you know, maybe could act better than him, but maybe don't have that.
The physicality.
Energy that you're talking. Yeah, like, yep. They don't have that thing, man. Like, they don't have that just draw to him. You can put him anywhere in the scene, you know, foreground, background, in focus, out of focus, and you're just like, what's he doing back there? I can't help but to pay attention to what he's doing. I have to
watch him.
Yeah, you got to. So I think that really adds to it as well.
I completely, 100% agree. Like, it was him. He was him for sure. So best scene, again, I would talk a little bit, but the Killmonger at the museum scene, I thought was just phenomenal. Like a great way to introduce any character in general, but let alone a villain, and just to see what kind of platform he was going to stand on throughout the course of the movie and to stand on that and go with it. So just the entirety of that scene was great.
People have been wearing those same glasses ever since.
No,
ever
hey, man.
Since, I'm telling you, like that whole look.
Jean jacket and glasses literally came back.
Yeah. Right. Legitimately. Right, like denim was just like, it would be interesting to look at denim stock after that, right? Just to see how it just like it would cripple.
How did Wrangler do? Levi's, which one? I don't know.
Yeah. All right, Chris, what was your best scene?
Oh, man. I know that the Killmonger ancestral plane scene is probably a little bit better, but to me, the best scene is that first time when T'Challa goes to the ancestral, you know, realm to see his dad. Okay. I meant, look, the score that plays on that is just really good. I think that
whole score, seeing whole
that
movie.
Atmosphere. Oh yeah, we got to talk about that. Like, it is just phenomenal. But that like one almost haunting, chilling, super emotional. Like, I don't even know what that instrument is, but like that scene that plays repeatedly throughout. Man, in that scene, in that context, and what, you know, he's kind of talking to his dad about, and the emotion that he's kind of going through. It just the way that the ancestral plane looks like that. Weird kind of purple that it gives you, the other, you know, panthers in the tree. That scene is just really, really cool to me. It's just amazing. It kind of, and granted, like a lot of the stuff that is in there, we later find out is not the most true, but I mean, it's just this guy being vulnerable and, you know, speak with his father and, you know, learning that I'm going to be king now and being told that, you know, you're going to have to find your own way to it. And just, I really think that scene is great. also probably, you know, given with, you know, Chadwick Boseman's passing, it probably hits me, it probably hit me a little bit more this time. This is my first time watching it since that. So it kind of stuck out to me a bit because of that. But I've always, I think, kind of liked it. Again, that part of the score is maybe my single favorite piece of music in the MCU. Like, it, you're not beating Ludwig, man. You give Ludwig something like this with its own unique personality and some time to work, and he's going to create something that is just
Beethoven?
Unique sounding. No. Modern.
The other one. Okay, I got you.
Yeah. Ludwig Göransson. I've never heard anyone say his last name before. When people talk about it, they just say Ludwig, and I'm just like, can y'all say his last name? So I can know what it is. I'm scared. He's got like the umlaut over the O, and I should know that because I like took German, but it's a scary last name.
Go ahead, girl. Speak of the German.
Oh, man. No. Ich habe eine Frage. I'm just kidding. I'm saying that I have a question. It was a little bit of German. I did say I have a question, but I don't have a question.
What's the point of having a German speaking girl if we're going to bring her out here once we have somebody speak German?
The cool part about it is like when I watch movies and they speak in German, like I know what they sound like. In Civil War, when he's got the lady coming up to his hotel room and she's talking to him in German, I know exactly what they're saying in the conversation, and it's like, it's like the coolest thing.
That is,
I don't need any subtitles for this.
Yeah, I know what there's. I know those words.
All right, Cole, what's your best scene?
Mine's actually kind of pretty. I mean, it's a little obscure. It's actually when Michael B. Jordan takes the throne. And it's mostly just because of the like filmmaking in it, because it starts with that, the fucking score slaps, by the way, the bass hits, drops in, it comes in, it's a flipped upside down camera that then just slowly rotates back up while he's walking. And he's wearing that just like dope ass fucking robe. He's just walking through there with that cool ass music and then just sits down and it's just like, oh yeah, this is my king for sure. I'm in. And then that whole scene after that is just him explaining basically his entire plan this whole time, which was to come, you know, get his revenge and then liberate all of black people from their oppressors. Right. Like think about that as a Marvel movie plot for just a second, like a character arc. And like, it's just fucking unbelievable. But in him explaining why that's important and all that sort of stuff is just my favorite scene. I love that. And I know that sounds crazy because it's just a short period of time, but like Chris, like you were saying, that is your favorite score in the MCU. This is mine because that just that fucking bass hitting with a little bit of hip hop in it and just, you know, having that kind of like old school kind of score to it as well. It was just fucking dope.
Yeah, that artistic.
That's a good scene, dude.
Coogler got was off the charts and he utilized every ounce of it. He's like, okay, I got y'all. Like even having Kendrick Lamar do the soundtrack, like everything about this was just right.
Michael B. Jordan got all the money shots too, dude. He got
the jacket scene,
the fire scene, that like camera flip, like that that's
throne
in the
and family. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like they gave him like all the coolest shit, and because he's gonna make it look even cooler because he's Michael B. Jordan.
Like, it may have not even been cool, right? Like it may have been normal shit, and he just did it.
Right.
It was just because it was him, right? Like they probably gave him a jean jacket because they were like, maybe this will make him unlikable. Maybe he'll be a little nerdy, and then
he's hot.
I was like, God damn it, he looks good.
Right. That
give him some glasses for some reason. Fuck.
Yeah, no. gold circular frames. It was probably on like the VFX house, like main character, like the guy making some of the fucking. They took the glasses off of him.
Yeah, and literally everything worked, and now it's just like the most utilized Halloween costume of all time. Is that?
Yeah. It should, man.
It's like that and Velma are number one and two as far as like popular Halloween.
Put some bumps on them. Oh, fuck, they look
cool. No. Yeah, this works too.
No.
This is even fucking cooler.
Dude, I know, man. I know, because it's just like, is this chicken pox? Oh, no, it's every kill he's ever had. Fuck. It's like,
what a sick fucker, by the way.
What is it? Eczema? It's his kills. Never mind. Yeah. Never mind. Now I'm totally terrified of this guy. So in the awards front, Cole, did you find anything?
Nominated for 7 fucking Oscars.
Let's go.
Best score, best costume, and best production design were all wins, which fucking of course.
Yep.
Best original song, best motion picture, Best Sound Editing and Best Sound Mixing were all nominated as well. And you know, it just a fucking, it's about time that a movie that people fucking love is nominated for Best Picture. And this was one of those movies that not only was it a beloved movie, it was also deserving of being a Best Picture nominee because it was just a great fucking movie. So
there we go. Absolutely. And Chris, I know you kind of touched on the trivia. I'll let you go ahead and jump off with the trivia that you found or that you hadn't already said throughout the course of the pod.
Oh, yeah. I kind of got it mixed up. I said trivia earlier, but I meant that how this will end up being nominated for Best Picture. That wasn't trivia. I was just thinking about when we got to that category. I do have one silly piece of trivia we might have to get a picture posted. So in that scene early on in the movie where they're going through just the markets or whatever, when he's walking with Nakia, the guy, this is very obscure, but the guy who's like ordering just one piece of chicken or whatever is my friend Abdul. He went to school here. He's from Atlanta. He lives in Atlanta.
Shout out Abdul. Near
Pinewood. Yeah. I'll see if I can find that scene. I'll send you guys a picture of him. But it's like, it's very, every time I watch it, I know it's him because I know what he looks like. And he told us about it. And he showed us a picture. But every time I watch the movie, I pause and I watch that scene three times. And I'm like, man, I've had to get this man off the square, slosh out of his mind to save multiple times. I'm in group chats with him. He's just this hilarious guy. And he is also in a huge piece of our, you know, American culture now in Black Panther. It's like, it's a small role where he just stands there and orders a piece of chicken, but it's insane to think of what this movie has kind of accomplished, what it means to people, and to be like, oh yeah, this is just some guy that I know that's in this, by the way. So
that casually, I know who he is. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's cool, man.
That's super cool. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, trivia, I found like Chris, Kugler compared the mines of Wakanda to the real mines in Congo, where like valuable minerals are actually being mined. And so just kind of like that parallel there was something that he felt like was, of course, important to this movie and relevant as well. So that was that was cool. Cole, did you find anything relevant?
No, not really. You know, I was kind of counting on you guys to give the goods about this. I don't know as much about the Marvel universe as you fellas, which is, you know, I leave it to the experts.
This one had like some weird kind of trivia. Like, it didn't have the trivia that we kind of normally think about. I think a lot of the stuff was like some small and some random influences, some stuff that you can just kind of get right off the surface. Sure. This one didn't have as much like as the wacky trivia. I think like
I can see that.
Yeah, this one was pretty straightforward.
All right, so there's Black Panther.
They weren't gonna originally cast King T'Challa as Tom Hanks.
Yeah. The
Last King of Africa, starring Tom Hanks.
It was going to be Ryan Gosling as Killmonger.
Yeah. As Killmonger, yeah. That would be fun, actually. Can we just see some like some screening of that?
Yeah, like, let's see a test footage. Yeah. Just want to know what that'd be like.
Yeah,
real fun. So that is Black Panther. You can go find that, of course, on Disney Plus. And then shortly after, we can go see Wakanda Forever. We can all cry in unison because that is going to be a very emotional, but I think also equally as awesome movie. And I'm very hyped to go see it. So everybody get geared up for that. But we are back to, we have Chris. This is your pick going.
Yep. It's going to be me. So my pick, after we watched Ocean's 12 and I saw Casey Affleck, I was like, hey, what's my favorite Casey Affleck movie? So we're gonna go over to Amazon Prime. I'm gonna ruin everyone's day and we're gonna watch Manchester by the Sea. I'm sorry. I know that like while he was on his run for this, the news came out that he's a terrible person, but the movie is pretty good. It's pretty good. I really want to watch it and talk about it with you guys. I hate to bring the mood down. Let's watch this terrible movie.
All right. But I'll think of an upper for a chaser. But
I hate that I keep picking these movies, but I love talking about shit like this with you guys. Like I can't help it. Like
I always have to pick feel good like movies this. After you, man. Because you keep putting me through it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm
worse
like
at podcasting, man. If you guys are worse at podcasting, I would have to take a movie like this, but you're too good. So I'm always interested to hear what you guys think about stuff like this.
Well, so you're saying we need to tank for Victor? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes, tank for Victor. Yeah. Tank for Victor. I wish the Knicks would tank for Victor, but they won't.
We absolutely will. All right, so everybody, yeah, we have our orders. We're going to go Disney Plus and check out Black Panther, and then we're going to Amazon Prime for Manchester by the Sea. But for all of us here at the Stream Team, Keith Evans, Cole Miller, Chris Lowry, Wakanda forever.